Your quality management system is certified once a year. Your software gets tested on every commit. One of those two things is actually managing quality, and it is not the one with the certificate on the wall.
Four things today. Why continuous certification beats periodic audits for actual quality outcomes. The contract procedure separation that makes your processes executor invariant. How multi-unit operations, franchises, regional networks can share quality standards while letting each location adapt how they meet them. And a real example, a complete specialty coffee operation specified in 25 YAML files.
So welcome, everyone, to today's deep dive. We are we're incredibly excited to have you with us today because we're unpacking something that, well, it fundamentally rewrites the rules of how businesses operate.
Yeah, it really does.
I mean, if you are an operations leader or a compliance manager or, frankly, just someone who is utterly exhausted by the glaring gap between those official dusty manuals on your shelf and what actually happens on the floor every single day.
Right, the real world.
Exactly. If you're tired of that, this deep dive is tailored specifically for you. We are looking closely at organizational schema theory, or OST.
It's a huge shift.
It is. And I want to jump right back to that opening statement.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of the certificate on the wall versus what actually manages quality.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've ever worked in a corporate environment, you know exactly what that panic leading up to an annual audit feels like.
Oh, absolutely. It's a universal corporate experience. And honestly, it highlights a structural flaw in business operations that we have just blindly accepted for decades.
Yeah, we just assume it's normal.
Right. The sources actually refer to this as the audit cycle effect.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how traditional quality management works today. Let's use ISO 9001 compliance as kind of the classic example.
You're the standard, right?
Supposedly. So an organization spends weeks, sometimes months, preparing intensively for that annual certification audit. Everyone is on their absolute best behavior. Teams are pulling all-nighters to make sure the paperwork is absolutely flawless.
Yeah.
The auditor arrives, the certificate is granted, they frame it on the wall in the lobby, and then what happens?
Well, everyone breathes a massive sigh of relief and immediately goes back to taking the exact same shortcuts they were taking before the auditor showed up.
Exactly.
I mean, I've lived through this. You spend a month pretending you do things one way just to satisfy an external reviewer.
Right.
But the actual reality of the business operates on unwritten rules and, you know, tribal knowledge.
Yeah. And that is the crucial insight from the research here. We tend to look at that reversion to old habits, and we call it a culture problem.
Right. We blame the people.
Exactly. We say the employees are lazy or management isn't disciplined enough, but it's not a culture problem. It's a structural incentive problem.
Interesting. How so?
Well, the goal of the entire system has shifted. The goal is no longer maintaining a high standard of quality. The goal is simply passing the audit.
I see.
And once the audit is passed, the incentive completely vanishes.
It's like cramming for a final exam versus actually learning the material.
Yeah.
Once the test is over, the knowledge vanishes. If we know this doesn't work for students, why are we running multi-million dollar businesses this way?
Because historically, we just haven't had the architecture to do it any differently in the physical world.
Right, we didn't have the tools.
Exactly. But the fix for this is entirely architectural. And we have to look at how software engineering solved this exact problem years ago.
Okay, so bringing it back to code.
Right. Software teams used to do massive, infrequent tests before a big release, and it was almost always a disaster.
Just a nightmare of bugs.
Constant bugs. Now they use CI/CD pipelines, continuous integration, and continuous deployment.
Mm.
Every single time a developer changes a line of code, an automated suite of tests runs in the background to validate that the entire system still works as intended.
So it's constantly checking itself.
Exactly. And OST argues that we need this exact paradigm for our business operations. The central thesis is this: certify a commit, not a calendar date.
Okay, I want to push back on this a little bit because I'm stuck on how this actually translates to physical reality.
That's fair.
Because in software, if a test fails in a CI/CD pipeline, the code simply doesn't deploy, right? The error is caught before the customer ever sees it.
Correct.
But if I run a coffee shop or like a manufacturing plant and a physical process fails.
A bad cup is already made.
Exactly. The bad cup of coffee is already in the customer's hand. The defective part is already off the assembly line. So how does continuous integration actually work when you're dealing with atoms instead of bits?
That is the exact friction point operations leaders hit when they first look at OST. And you are entirely correct that you cannot unmake a physical cup of coffee.
Right.
But continuous certification in a physical business isn't about catching the individual bad cup after it's made. It's about continuously testing the system's capability to produce a good cup.
Okay. So it's testing the system itself.
Right now, organizations are the only complex designed artifacts in the world that lack formal continuous acceptance testing.
Wow, when you put it that way.
It's wild, right? Engineers test the structural integrity of bridges continuously with sensors.
Sure.
But in business, we write a narrative procedure in a Word document, bury it in a SharePoint folder, and just hope the staff follows it.
Yeah, cross our fingers.
With OST, you are feeding continuous telemetry into a pipeline. So temperature sensor logs from the espresso machine, automated inventory counts, digital checklist completions.
Okay, I see.
It uses all that to validate that the organization is currently operating within the bounds of its specified design.
Which implies that the organization actually has a specified design that a computer can read.
Yes, exactly.
I should be testing my business like I test my software.
Yeah.
But to do that, to actually build a pipeline that tests a business, we have to fundamentally change the way we write the rules.
Precisely.
But it definitely can't feed a 200-page narrative PDF manual into an automated testing pipeline.
No, absolutely not.
The computer wouldn't know what to do with three paragraphs of prose about, you know, providing a welcoming customer atmosphere.
Right. It's just noise to a machine. And this is where the traditional operations manual completely breaks down. If you want to test a business, you have to specify the business in a structured, machine-readable format.
Okay, so how do we do that?
Well, traditional manuals fail because they commit a cardinal sin of systems design. They bundle two entirely different concepts together.
What are they bundling?
They bundle the required outcome, the contract of what must be achieved, with the specific localized steps to achieve it, the procedure.
Okay, explain that bundling for me. Why is that the fatal flaw? It seems kind of intuitive to put the what and the how in the same document.
It seems intuitive until you try to scale or until the environment changes. Let's look at a traditional document for a coffee shop.
All right.
It might say, to make a standard espresso, use the La Marzocco Linea PB machine, grind the beans for exactly 5.2 seconds on setting 4, tamp the grounds with 30 pounds of pressure, and pull the shot.
Very specific.
Very. That is all bundled together in one paragraph. Now, let's say that shop's machine breaks down and they have to buy a new, fully automated espresso machine from a different manufacturer.
Oh, I see. The entire document is instantly invalidated.
Exactly.
The rule book is just garbage now because the tool changed, even though the desired outcome, like a perfectly balanced 93-degree shot of espresso, hasn't changed at all.
Right.
So the staff now has to just ignore the manual, which breeds that whole culture of non-compliance we talked about earlier.
Exactly. The manual becomes a liability. OST solves this by introducing a strict 6-level specification cascade that untangles the what from the how.
Okay, a 6-level cascade, break that down.
Level 0 through 2 are what we call contracts. These define exactly what must be achieved in measurable, testable terms.
Okay.
Level 0 is the customer experience target. Level 1 is the service delivery. Level 2 is the actual process output.
Got it. And the rest?
Sitting below those, you have levels 3 through 5. These are the procedures. This is the how. This is where you specify the local equipment, the specific local supplier, the exact human tasks required on that specific floor.
So it's like a restaurant menu versus the chef's recipe. The menu is the contract with the diner. It promises a specific dish. The chef's specific recipe in the back is just the procedure. Why has business operations spent decades confusing the two?
It's a great question, and it's a perfect analogy. And when you force an organization to separate the contract from the procedure, an entirely new level of operational resilience emerges.
It makes sense.
Your ISO processes should be executor invariant. Write what must be achieved. Let each location decide how.
Executor invariant. That's a great term.
If we go back to the coffee example, the contract at level 2 might simply state extraction time must be between 25 and 30 seconds. Yield must be 36 to 40 grams. Temperature must be 92 to 94 degrees Celsius.
Just the hard metrics.
Right. That is the contract. That is what your automated system tests against. That contract is executor invariant.
Because it doesn't matter who makes it.
Exactly. It fundamentally does not care if the executor of the task is a human barista, pulling a manual lever, a robotic arm, or a fully automated AI system.
Wow.
The localized procedure at level 4 adapts to whatever equipment is present, but the level 2 contract holds firm.
Man, if you're listening to this and mapping it onto your own business, just think about how much time your management team wastes updating documents just because a minor tool or software vendor changed.
It's endless.
But wait, if the how is totally separated from the what, doesn't that mean I no longer need to force my second or third location to buy the exact same equipment as my flagship store?
Yep.
Because that changes the entire franchise model.
It completely upends it. Once you separate the contract from the procedure, you unlock this massive structural superpower for multi-unit operations, regional networks, and franchises.
A superpower.
You gain the ability to fork a business.
Okay, forking a business. For those of us who aren't software developers, forking or doing a Git clone usually applies to code.
Right.
I copy a repository of software, I make my own branch of it, and I can tweak it without ruining the original. How on earth do you fork a physical organization?
Think about what a traditional franchise actually sells you today. For a massive upfront fee, let's say $2.2 million to open a fast food franchise.
Yes, huge numbers.
And a perpetual 8% royalty. What are you actually buying?
The name.
You're buying the brand name, sure, but you are primarily buying their operational knowledge. You are buying their massive, rigid operating manual.
Right, all their SOPs.
But that manual is bundled. It forces you to use their exact suppliers, their exact equipment models, their exact floor plans, regardless of whether that makes sense in your specific local market.
Totally inflexible.
Exactly. OST enables forkability. You take those level zero to level two contracts, the non-negotiable quality standards that define the brand, and you share them across all your locations.
Okay.
But you allow each individual local site to write its own level three to level five procedures to adapt to their reality.
Oh, wow. Okay, I want you to picture this. Imagine a two-column diagram. On the left column, you have the traditional SOP. It's a massive, dusty binder that bundles outcome requirements with procedure steps. It's certified annually, and it lives in a SharePoint folder nobody opens. On the right column, you have the OST structure. L0, L2 contracts sitting above L3, L5 procedures. These contracts are machine-readable and version-controlled. The second location is shown as a fork off the main branch. It has the exact same contracts, but the procedure files are different, showing exactly six parameter overrides highlighted in a green and red diff view.
That visual you just described is the exact representation of the Spectra Coffee demonstration from the source research.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the researchers didn't just theorize this. They built a complete, fully functioning specialty coffee operation specified entirely in 25 YAML files.
Okay, let's pause on YAML for a second just to ground this. YAML is just a structured data format, right? It's not complex programming code. It's highly readable text organized with clear indentations, key value pairs, and lists. It's something a manager can learn to read and edit in an afternoon.
Exactly. It's human readable, but crucially, it is also machine readable.
Right.
So they had 25 of these YAML files defining all the contracts for customer experience, temperature, extraction, milk texture, and cleaning cadences. That was the main branch. The original coffee shop.
I get the baseline.
Then they simulated opening a second location in Berlin-Friedrichshain.
And because of the OST structure, they didn't have to hire a consultant to rewrite a 300-page operations manual for the German market.
Not a single word of prose was rewritten. They simply forked the digital repository.
That's incredible.
The new Berlin location differed from the original location by exactly six parameter overrides in those YAML files.
Just six.
The water hardness in Berlin is different, so that variable changed.
Yeah.
They used a slightly different model of espresso machine because of local availability, so the equipment ID changed.
Makes sense.
And the opening hours were shifted by 1 hour. That was it. Six lines of text highlighted in a diff view. Everything else, the core level zero to level two contracts that define the Spectra Coffee experience, stayed perfectly intact and inherited from the main branch.
Okay, so instead of buying an operations manual, I'm basically doing a Git clone on a coffee shop. But if they can change the procedures, how do we guarantee the second location doesn't completely ruin the brand?
It's the most critical question you can ask, and it forces us to redefine what compliance actually means.
Okay, how so?
In a traditional system, compliance means following the manual step by step.
Okay.
It is micromanagement.
Right? Doing exactly what you're told.
In OST, compliance means passing the automated tests. Remember, both the original location and the Berlin location are subject to the exact same CI/CD testing pipeline.
Oh, right.
If the Berlin location uses a different grinder, but their continuous telemetry shows their espresso still perfectly passes the level two contract.
The 92 degrees and all that.
Exactly. Meaning the extraction is exactly 25 to 30 seconds, the temperature is exactly 92 to 94 degrees, and the yield is exactly 38 grams. And they are 100% compliant.
Because the contract is met, the promise to the customer is fulfilled.
Exactly. The brand is protected by the rigorous automated test suite, not by dictating the hand motions of the barista.
That is so freeing.
You guarantee the quality of the brand by rigorously enforcing the contracts, leaving the operational freedom, the how, to the people actually standing on the floor doing the work.
And if they fail?
If their new procedure fails the test, the system flags it immediately, and they have to adjust their procedure until the contract is green again.
Okay, this brings us to the final and perhaps most urgent piece of this puzzle. Because redefining quality management and creating flexible franchises is incredibly powerful today.
It is.
But there's a ticking clock mentioned in the research.
Yeah.
We aren't just doing this to make life easier for human
No,
managers.
we're not.
The immediate practical implication for the 2026 and 2027 timeline is the arrival of AI operators who need to be onboarded into these complex business environments.
This is the catalyst. This is what makes transitioning to organizational schema theory an absolute necessity, not just a nice-to-have optimization.
It's a survival thing.
We are moving past the era of AI simply being a chatbot that helps you write emails. Autonomous AI agents and operators are entering business workflows right now.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
They're being deployed to route supply chain logistics, manage real-time inventory, handle customer service escalations, and perform continuous compliance checking. The existential question every operations leader must answer today is, how do you intend to onboard a digital worker?
Well, I can tell you what won't work. You absolutely cannot hand an AI agent that 200-page PDF manual full of ambiguous prose, contradictory paragraphs, and unwritten cultural assumptions and expect it to run your global supply chain.
No, it would be a disaster.
Human beings can barely read those manuals without getting confused, and we have intuition and context.
Exactly. Large language models can summarize text, but deterministic AI agents that execute core business functions require structured data natively.
They need cold, hard data.
They operate on explicit hierarchies, measurable thresholds, and clear cross-references. When an AI agent looks at an OST specification, those 25 YAML files, it isn't trying to parse the subjective, squishy meaning of a sentence like, "Ensure the cold brew remains pleasantly chilled."
Right. What does pleasantly chilled even mean to a robot?
Exactly. Instead, it reads a structured level two contract that explicitly states cold brew storage temperature variable must equal 2 to 5 degrees Celsius, validated via IoT sensor log daily at 06.00.
It's like trying to teach a self-driving car how to navigate by reading it a poem instead of giving it GPS coordinates.
No.
The AI needs structured boundaries, not prose. It's not a question of if you specify your processes, but whether you do it before or after the AI arrives.
That's a great way to look at it. Teams that have already done the work to specify their processes in machine-readable OST contracts will be able to onboard advanced AI operators in a matter of days.
Because the boundaries are already drawn.
The AI simply ingests the Git repository, instantly understands the exact boundaries of the contracts, identifies the available procedures, and begins executing or monitoring the system with perfect clarity.
And if an organization waits, if they assume they can just, you know, buy an AI tool next year and figure it out then.
They are going to be in a world of pain.
Yeah.
Teams that rely on unstructured narrative SharePoint documents are going to spend months, if not years, doing incredibly expensive, painfully slow AI training data preparation.
Because it's all messy.
Exactly. They will have to hire legions of consultants to sit down, interview staff, extract all that tacit, unwritten knowledge, untangle the contradictory prose, and translate it into structured formats anyway.
So they have to do the work regardless.
Right. That data preparation phase that everyone dreads in enterprise AI, that is really just specification work being done late and expensively.
Wow.
The companies that adopt an organizational schema now are building the underlying digital infrastructure that allows AI to seamlessly absorb their coordination overhead tomorrow.
Man. If you're listening to this, it really isn't a question of if you will eventually specify your processes in code, but whether you choose to do it proactively now or reactively after the AI arrives and your competitors are already running automated self-validating operations.
That's the reality.
Let's take a step back and look at the whole picture we've painted today. We started with the sheer absurdity of the annual audit, the dusty binder on the shelf that only comes out to satisfy an inspector while the real business runs on tribal knowledge.
The certificate on the wall.
Exactly. We explored how separating the what from the how Drawing a hard line between contracts and procedures completely changes the game.
Untangling the two.
It allows businesses to become executor invariant. It doesn't matter if a human, a robot, or an AI is doing the task as long as the testable contract is continuously met. We saw how this untangling unlocks the ability to literally fork a physical business, sharing immutable quality standards across a global network while adapting local procedures with just a few lines of code in a YAML file.
It's beautiful.
And finally, we looked at how translating your business into machine-readable, testable contracts is the only viable path to successfully integrating the wave of AI operators arriving over the next couple of years.
It is a profound shift in organizational design. The research driving this paradigm shift is called Organizational Schema Theory, or OST.
Yes, highly recommend looking into it.
For those of you who want to dig into the foundational science and read the actual specifications, there are 20-plus research papers available on Zenodo. And just to be completely precise, these are preprints currently under journal review, not yet peer-reviewed.
Good to know.
There is also a working implementation and documentation you can explore directly at orgschema.com. The SpectraCoffee YAML files we discussed today are fully open source, so you can inspect exactly what a machine-readable business looks like.
Episode EOST3 goes deeper on the quality management side, specifically how this maps to ISO 9001 and what continuous certification means for compliance professionals. And if you want to understand how AI absorbs coordination overhead at the organizational level, Episode 7 covers the franchise design question directly.
If your entire business could eventually be validated by a single line of code returning a green checkmark, what exactly is your management team spending their time managing today?